welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. We're going to have a fun and very entertaining show today on the podcast. I'm going to be talking with my good friend Jason, who's also a tennis professional, and we're going to be discussing some difficult types of people and opponents to play in a competitive situation. Real quickly, before we get to that, just two quick things. First of all, you guys have just about a week left if you'd like to participate in the first Essential Tennis Clinic, which is taking place in Baltimore. The weekend that it's taking place is August 29th and 30th, and you have until July 27th to shoot me an email and let me know that you're interested in participating. There's two spots open for the clinic, and it's going to be a really great time. Today is the 17th that I'm recording this. I'm going to be releasing this podcast early on the 18th. You guys have till the 27th to let me know if you'd like to participate. One more quick thing. I'd love to do a clinic on the West Coast as well. California seems to make the most sense to me. I've got a lot of listeners there and several forum members as well. If you're interested in helping me plan and organize a California Essential Tennis Clinic, please send me an email at ian@essentialtennis.com. I'm not familiar with California at all. I'd like to get some help setting the clinic up. And if you'd like to help me out in doing that, and you live in the San Francisco area or maybe the Los Angeles area, and you'd like to get a significant discount off attending the clinic, please send me an email at ian@essentialtennis.com. All right, let's get down to business. Sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction. My guest on the podcast today is my good friend Jason Cole, who's been on the show several times and has also contributed on the Tour News blog at Essential Tennis and is a frequent contributor to the forums as well. Jason, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, glad to be here, buddy.
Well, thanks for coming back. And we're going to have kind of, we're probably going to have one of the more entertaining conversations that we've ever done on the podcast or that I've ever done. We're going to be talking about several different types of opponents that are particularly annoying or opponents that just kind of make our job of trying to win on the tennis court more difficult than it has to be. And this is something that all of us have to deal with if we play any competitive tennis at all. It really doesn't matter what level of play, I don't think. We basically, Jason and I here have five different types of opponents that through their attitudes or their actions or the way they play can make our mental game extremely tough. And I've definitely seen all five of these at some point or other. Jason, I know you have as well. You and I have both competed quite a bit, and this is just kind of something that everybody has to deal with at some point or another, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think the better you get, the more distractions via cheating and or other circumstances that mind games that people can try and pull come about. But certainly, I've even seen 2-5s really cheating and pulling mind games. So I think any walk of tennis is gonna get some hooligans.
Absolutely, it's not just soccer that has hooligans, is it?
No, we got them in tennis too. Even in California, particularly.
That's probably surprising to a lot of people outside the sport, but it's definitely something that we have to put up with. And I would probably wager that the average level player, maybe somebody around 3.0 or 3.5, probably has a pretty difficult time discerning what to do about these types of players and how to handle the situation. So Jason and I are going to go through five different types of annoying players to play or difficult players to play mentally. and we're going to tell you guys what how we think that you should handle it, what the best way is to handle this type these types of players. Maybe we'll tell a couple entertaining stories along the way as well, and hopefully we'll give you guys some good advice. So let's kick things off with the classic chatty opponent, somebody who just kind of seems bent on distracting you, typically during changeovers, but not even necessarily. And this is the type of person that'll ask you questions about your game, ask you questions about just random things to try to pull your focus away from what you're doing. And another classic comment or question that this type of player will often use is the old, "Boy, your serve is sure doing great today." And just to try to kind of pull you off your game. It may or may not be on purpose. But Jason, why don't you give us your opinion on this type of player? I know you may even have a fondness of this player. Tell us what you're thinking.
I like these guys. I think these guys are sneaky. I've done this myself at times, for sure. You know, a lot of times at lower levels, I think probably it's just people being nice. But the fact is, you know, as you start talking about other things, the football game, the, you know, Wimbledon, if you watch that, other things, your mind drifts off tennis and you play worse tennis, which is what, you know, if they're doing it on purpose or not, it's a crafty move. And I think as people get better, more aware of the mind games, and hopefully a lot of the essential tennis readers and listeners are, you can start to pick up on people that, you know, maybe you're beating them down and all of a sudden they want to start talking on changeovers. Well, yeah, I'm doubting they're all of a sudden being friendly now that they're taking a beating. So probably pulling a move on you, and hopefully you can recognize it.
Yeah, I agree that that's typically when it's going to happen, is when you're up by a whole lot and all of a sudden this person wants to engage in some friendly conversation in between games or during a changeover. I mean, what's the best way to deal with this, you think? Just, I mean, typically myself, personally, you don't want to be rude and completely blow them off, but I think probably the best thing to do is just give short answers, make it obvious you don't really want to talk, but without being rude. I guess it's kind of a fine line to walk. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, well, a couple things. First of all, as a person who's definitely done that to get people out of their game, you know, it is a good move. You're trying to find jokes or funny things or things that they obviously care about, or, you know, places that something to get them to talk. So it's really quite tricky to give short answers to get out of that. One thing I've done, which might be a little rude, but, you know, I'm there to win, would be to take my towel and my water bottle and go to shade. If the benches aren't shaded, go somewhere where there is shade. That way it looks like you're not really trying to avoid
Right. Your
shenanigans. You're just doing something that is intelligent to, you know, stay out of the sun. If there's no shade, a lot of times facilities will have benches on both sides, maybe for two courts or a water bottle somewhere else. Go to something like that. That way the player's sitting on their bench thinking, well, you know, he wants to be by that water over there.
Right.
You know, sit on the bench to himself, think about things, you know. If you have a notepad or something, which I never did, but I saw other people do it, you know, go to a different bench and pull that out. So obviously they think you're thinking about something else.
Sure.
And more likely would leave you alone. If they don't, they're really trying to pull something. Good move by them.
Yeah. No, I like that. That's a good suggestion, actually, is to have an actual, like, legitimate thing to go to, like the shade or the... say, hey, I'm going to go get some water or the notebook. I like that. I try to be too nice. Yeah, I mean, I would probably just give short answers and make it look like I didn't really want to talk, but, you know, not engage them, but probably just throw them a little bone. But realizing that they're probably trying to throw me off my game. Would you say that you've used this successfully, Jason, in distracting people and getting them off their game?
Over 100 times.
Over 100 times. Wow.
Ever, question about it.
Ever against
if,
me?
If somebody's really focused and you can get them to start talking and opening up and thinking about other things, you know, as long as you don't lose your focus worse than they do, it works.
Nice.
Absolutely. It works every time. somebody's going to lose their focus more once you start talking.
Well,
if you're conscious of it and they're not, you're going to win that game.
We're going to have
still might
a,
not be enough, but
yeah. We're going to have a separate gamesmanship show. gamesmanship tips with Jason Cole.
I'm not saying it's, I don't know, it's a way to win. I don't think it's that dirty. It's just, if someone's really focused and you can get them to unfocus, that's tennis. That's how it works.
All right. Well, with that, let's go ahead and move on to culprit number two. And this is somebody who really kind of goes an extra step here. The person we just talked about, the chatty player, they're kind of trying to distract you during changeovers. Now we're going to talk about somebody who is actually distracting, trying to throw you off your game during points, actually during the match. And this player is obnoxious or annoying in general, maybe getting angry after losing points, you know, yelling, complaining, maybe throwing the racket. Or maybe this is somebody who grunts excessively, something like that. I mean, and this is kind of something that we would put up with on a routine basis back in college tennis. And I would assume in your play after college too, wouldn't you say, Jason?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is another one. It's all about mental fortitude, being aware of what they're doing. Some people are just stupid and decide to go into the tank and destroy stuff. And that really isn't going to bother you too much. But other people are doing it on purpose to, again, throw you off a rhythm and make you think. So yeah, that's another tricky situation.
And this is actually a person or a type of person that Sally brought up on the forums, and she had played somebody who was, you know, just particularly obnoxious on the court during points, kind of yelling at themselves, getting angry, etc. And I think the biggest trap that listeners need to be aware of is that when somebody starts to do this and kind of act out on the courts and kind of starts to get negative, etc., I think the tendency is to assume that that player at that point is just basically given up. And at that point, you know, I've got this person now and no big deal. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, or maybe even relax and say, well, you know, this match is obviously over. This player is going to tank. And I, you know, a certain percentage of the time that's probably going to happen against this person who can't control their emotions. But in my opinion, that's kind of the time to really kick things up to another gear and just put them down completely. Just make sure that they stay angry and continue to be focused and stick with their winning game plan. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, I think when people start to do that, it's actually a more dangerous time for you than if they're just being a Federer-like, you know, statue and taking their beating. Because, again, it's going to throw you off your rhythm. I think the most important piece of advice I could give is to make sure you have a good routine down and you stick with it. You know, point ends, go get your towel or do whatever you do, get a ball, take your time, go up to the line, take the right amount, you know, do the same things you've been doing. So no matter what happens on the other side of the court, it's hard not to watch somebody throw the racket and laugh at him a little bit, but,
right,
you know, try and stick as close to you can as the routine, because whatever you're doing is probably working and you don't want to deviate. You know, if you try and put the clamps on them, maybe you start going for a little bit too much. I just stick with what's working.
Yeah, good advice.
That's very hard to do.
Yeah, it can be, because it really is distracting, and you're right, it's it's difficult not to watch this person self-destruct and kind of enjoy it, at least for me. Personally, I know definitely for you, anybody who's competitive, it's fun to watch your opponent kind of self-destruct on the court, but you guys have to be careful not to let your guard down at that point, because, you know, who knows, maybe that's right when this particular player kind of knuckles down and starts to play their best right after an outburst like that. So you have to be careful. And Jason, I like your advice on the routine. Between point routine, that's extremely important, and something that I just went over in detail in, I think it was podcast 73. If you're listening to this show for the first time, check out the podcast titled Focus. And keeping your focus between points is extremely important. And Jason's suggestion of having a set routine, and that's why you guys see professional players go back and grab a towel, and they'll kind of check out, you know, all the balls and screw around with their strings and that sort of thing. It's kind of to go through something that they're familiar with and comfortable with to refocus themselves and not worry about anything else around them, but just, you know, refocus on their strategy or just not think about anything and just get ready for the next point. So definitely important.
When I used to play, I had a towel in the backcourt like most players do, and I would wipe my hands off and my grip off nearly every point, and my hands don't sweat. My grip was never wet, and my hands were not wet. But it was just this, simple routine thing, get my mind somewhere that it needed to be. I wouldn't do it if I was in a good mental state, but, you know, a lot of times you see things drift off. You get a piece of information that's really going to help you, and you kind of lose focus on what you need to do.
Sure.
So you go back, go into your towel, which you've done, you know, a million times, and kind of set you back in the right line.
Yeah.
Pretty much every piece of advice we'll talk about tonight, I think, can be started via that path.
I agree. And the opposite of that, I think it's worth pointing out. If you guys watch much tennis at all, you'll see this from amateurs all the time, and even professionals. But the opposite of somebody who has a good between point routine is somebody who will finish a point and just immediately walk over to the other side, just kind of stand there, you know, finish a point. And this is a way to tank really quickly. If you guys are not playing particularly well, just to go from corner, you know, from side to side and just immediately play the next point is not a good idea. You guys need to have some kind of downtime between points. And what Jason is suggesting with the towel and anything else like that is an excellent idea.
That's another crafty move you bring up is the guy who takes excessively long between points or goes really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, both moves, it's hard to go really quickly if you're the returner, but if you're the server, you can. And again, it's to get somebody off their rhythm. And I've seen both of them used well.
Yeah, when you and I played doubles in college, one of the you kind of taught me this was something I had never considered before, but when you and I were kind of on a run, like especially if we had just broken our opponent's serve, you know, we'd be walking, you know, towards the chairs, you know, the water bottles, etc. And I remember us walking towards our water bottles after breaking somebody's serve, and you kind of leaned over and whispered, go, just keep walking. And we just walked right past their chairs, right past the water bottles, went right to the other side and just kind of stood there and looked at the other team, you know, trying to take a break, you know, just to try to rush them, keep them moving because the momentum was obviously on our side. And the opposite is also true. You're right, Jay, to kind of stall. And when things aren't going your way, there's nothing wrong with using all the time that you have allotted and go ahead and take your time and kind of put the momentum back in your side.
Yeah, I think some people put that in a gamesmanship category, but I really don't. I see it as just being intelligent
and
using the tools that are within the rules to do whatever you can to win. That's what I've always cared about.
Yeah, it comes down to that, doesn't it?
Well, and you know, not for some people, no, but
yeah, good
for
point.
Me, it always did. So,
well, let's go to our third player here, and that is somebody who accuses you of making bad calls. And this is not terribly uncommon, especially at, I would say, higher levels where things are very competitive. And basically it depends on the type of player you're playing against. Some people just tend to suspect immediately that you're making a bad call. Anything that's close that you call out, they're going to give you kind of the evil eye and ask you if you're sure if it was out, etc. And that can really kind of escalate quickly and make you feel uncomfortable, depending on who you are. Again, I mean, Jason and myself have heard the "are you sure" question 1,000 times, and we're not calling the ball out unless we're sure, except in special circumstances, which we might get to later. But Jay, what are your thoughts on this type of player, person who's kind of constantly accusing you of making bad calls?
Well, some of these people are just stupid, but I think the majority of them, certainly, you know, as you move on in tennis, are doing it again on purpose to try and earn some calls later in the match. They figure if they bug you enough, eventually some of them are going to start to land just barely out,
right?
And you're sick of being questioned, and so you might give it to them, and you know, and that works. If that works on you, you know, then their time put in has made sense. It's a cheap, dirty way. I've never done it myself. It's just gamesmanship again to try and earn calls, and it works absolutely.
So, any special, you know, focus suggestion or anything that you would suggest to our listeners to combat that, or do you just kind of stick to your guns and just make the best calls that you can?
I think the best thing that you can do is stay calm, tell them they missed it, tell them to get a line judge, tell them there's one right over the corner, you'll go get it if they want it, you know, just keep it smooth. Most of the time, they're just pissy that they missed. They probably even know they missed. They're just either, and this is if smart, trying to earn calls later in the match, or trying to get you out of your game, trying to get you pissed off, or trying to get your rhythm broken so that they can, you know, make a move later on. So for you to get riled up when they're in a situation like that is a little bit silly.
Yeah, I think
I recognize it.
I think going ahead and just suggesting that you get a line judge is probably going to be the best recourse. And yeah, I agree with you. Usually it's somebody just kind of throwing a little tantrum that they missed a shot. Maybe it was particularly easy and they couldn't believe it, and they're just kind of blowing off some steam. But yeah, if it happens, guys, more than a handful of times, you know, if it happens repeatedly, absolutely, just go ahead and get a line judge and be done with it. If you're go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the best things I've actually heard someone say, and I've never said it this well myself, but it happened actually just like a month ago. Guy came up to get a line judge and said, "Hey, I'm sorry to bother you guys, but we're obviously disagreeing on some calls over here and could just use somebody to see the ball a little more clearly for us."
Nice.
You know, that way you go at the line judge. The line judge, for the record, most of the time is thinking, "Oh, these two idiots can't make a call." You know, so when somebody comes up to him saying something like that, at least you're the person who said that now has some sort of intellectual base going into it. So they're, you definitely a leg up with the line judge at that point.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's not a bad move.
No, I can't say that I've ever heard that tactful of a request for a line judge. Usually,
yeah, I mean, it doesn't put the blame on the other guy. It just says we're seeing things a little bit differently and we could use somebody to, you know, see things better for us. And that, you know, you could say that's just a nice, tactful way of doing it. But again, that's a little game there. You're earning a little bit of leg up, and any line judge that goes over to that court now thinks that you're a little bit more honest. So, you know, you've got some integrity for phrasing it like that, because most of the time you hear, "This jerk I'm playing over there is hooking me."
Right, exactly.
So.
All right, good advice. I like that. Oh, we got two more types of players to get to, and these are the most infamous. So we're saving the best for last. But let's go to number four, and that is somebody who we're kind of giving the benefit of the doubt to. We're pretty sure they're making some bad calls, or maybe we're even positive that they've made some bad calls, but they're not doing it on purpose. Maybe they're misjudging what they're seeing. Maybe they didn't get a good look at it, but they're calling it out anyway. They're not doing it maliciously, but they're definitely not using the best judgment in their line calls. And this is going to be as opposed to the person who kind of cheats on purpose. And we're going to save that one for last, but people do, you know, make mistakes sometimes. However, that being said, you guys will sometimes play people who make more honest mistakes than others. And I mean, is just going ahead and getting a line judge right away the best thing to do, Jason? Or do you think there's some kind of recourse we can take on the court ourselves to try to resolve this sort of situation? Let's assume that it's kind of an honest mistake. What do you think?
Well, for one thing, don't say, "Are you sure?" Because everybody who ever hears that says yes. And then that's essentially the end of the argument, or you're being a jerk for bringing it up again.
Well, let me...
That's they already made their mind on.
Let me interrupt you. What do you think about, like, at a 2.5 or a 3.0 level? Do you think it's worth asking, are you sure, at that level?
No. I would phrase it differently, because, again, you're putting them at a yes or no answer, which is just so easy to say yes to. I don't think that's smart. If I was at a 2.5 level, and I'm, even if I'm not sure, I'm just going to say something more along the lines of, boy, that looked, you know, really close to the line to me. I sure didn't catch it. You know, it looked like it was on the line. Or, boy, how far out would you say that was? You know, something to make them think about it.
Right.
If you're playing on clay, then you've really got some leverage, because every tennis ball that touches the surface makes a mark, even at a 2.5 level. So, you know, there's some smarter ways to ask that question than just, are you sure? Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I go back and forth between the, are you sure? I mean, if it's close, and I'm, you know, I'll sometimes use, are you sure, if I'm pretty sure it was out, actually. And I just want to kind of let them know that I'm not going to let them get away with a bad call if it is extremely close, or if they aren't unsure. Maybe sometimes I might even think that they did make a wrong call, and I just kind of want to let them know that I'm keeping an eye on them, I guess. But I'll go back and then, go ahead.
I understand what you're saying, and I like that. That is a great move that everybody should be doing if they're in a situation like this. But do it a smarter way. Like, man, that looks really close to me. You don't need to hear their answer. You're just making a statement so that you're keeping an eye on them, because, you know, asking that question feels like they're telling you and you've got some sort of recourse. Whereas if you're just saying, boy, that looked like a cut to me, oh, well, you know, something like that, they're thinking about it. You know, if you want to be a little more forceful, you say, huh, that one really looked like it caught the line there. You know, something of that nature. At least make them think about it more than just saying nope.
I see what you're saying, but I actually kind of like making them, and yeah, you're right. Obviously, you know, playing at a 5.0 level, I don't expect people to say, well, no, I'm not sure, and go back on their call. So you're right. Clearly, when I ask, are you sure, I'm not expecting them to go back and give me the point.
I've never seen anyone
right.
do that, ever.
but there's something I kind of like about making them confirm it, or I kind of want to make them give me an answer, like, are you sure about that? I want them to confirm to me that, you know, something. I want them to you know, really stand behind their call and let them know that I'm not really sure that they made the right call there. I think that saying, well, I look good to me, is, you know, I don't know, it's just kind of a statement. You're not really...
Could you say something like, we'll compromise, Ian. Could you say something like, that didn't catch the outside of the line there, huh? Or something
yeah,
like that,
work.
That didn't catch the line? Anything other than the... My thing is, like... My alarm goes off in the morning, I slam it as fast as I can, and half the time don't even know if it went off or not, because I'm so ready for that to come. It's the same thing every time, and I feel like the, are you sure, gets the same response.
Okay.
No thought whatsoever, it's just the immediate slam, you know.
I understand what you're saying, for
Boom.
Sure. I was going to say, by the way, that I kind of hinge back and forth between are you sure and how far out was that? I actually enjoy asking. Yeah, can you give me a measurement on that? How far out was that?
Sure. That's way better. In my opinion, that's a lot better than are you sure? Because at least, and most of the time, though you miss by half an inch, they're going to say 7 inches, you know, a foot. There's some
right.
sort of jerk answer, but at least you made them think about it. You know, and if they answer a foot, then they still know there's some sort of disagreement there. Rather than... You just accepted the fact that they, you know.
Sure. I understand. Yeah, I think depending on people's personality, they could probably go either way or maybe even try both.
I think you could potentially even still be a nice person and just, you know, if they make the call out, you could just say, oh, man, that felt good, you know.
Sure.
How far did I miss? But, you know, and you're not really being a jerk there. You're just questioning it in a way that makes them think, you know, you're not too confident with their call.
Yeah, I think that's good feedback too. There's really a lot of different ways that you can express doubt. You can do it in kind of a covert way, or a more direct questioning as well. So I guess there's kind of a wide range of responses you can give depending on the situation.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, I like making people think.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. All right, let's go to number five, and that is the person who we know is cheating, who is making bad calls, and it's not even like it was kind of close, and maybe it could have gone either way, and maybe you're going to ask, are you sure that didn't touch any part of the line? But we're actually positive, it landed inside the line, etc., and they're calling it out, and maybe even they've done it multiple times. And
it's a big point.
Yeah, that's a good situation to bring up. Yeah, maybe it's on like a break point or something, and you hit a passing shot, and they call it out. I mean, there's not really a lot of recourse you have because it's their call on any one particular point. Getting the line judge clearly is kind of the best thing to do. Jason, I know that you've gone to even more extreme measures. What do you think is the best thing to do for an average level player?
First of all, the situation sucks because now they're forcing you to either go get a line judge, which nobody wants to do.
Yeah.
That's obviously causing controversy, and a lot of times you feel like you're the jerk for going to get a line judge. That sucks. Or you just have to cheat back. And if somebody, nobody who's a decent person in my mind likes cheating. You don't really want to get put in this position, but it's happened to everybody listening, I'm sure, where they're positive a person is making bad calls. If you're on clay, that gets even easier. You're just sitting there going, well, there's no mark out, so I know it was in. And I even had someone recently, within the last 2 years, do this to me where there's no mark on a clay court after I hit a first serve, and the guy says, there doesn't need to be a mark. I called it out.
Ouch. Well,
first of all, you can see at least within a foot where I hit the serve, there's a big old mark right on the line that goes across the whole line, and no mark that's out. You're well aware this guy's cheating at that point, and now you've either got to cheat back or you've got to get a line judge. I don't think there's another way to handle that.
Well, in keeping in mind, Jay, that you and I have played at a higher level than most players, and you've played at a higher level than myself, a lot of players aren't going to have to put up with malicious cheating the way that we have. And even that being said, I'd like to state for the record that I can't remember personally ever actually cheating back myself. If you can remember any time that I have, please tell me. But that's something that I think I would have a really hard time ever having to do. I think I'd almost rather just quit playing somebody before I would actually purposefully cheat somebody back. And to be quite honest,
sure,
with you,
but then they win. They win. Well, so it worked perfectly what they just did.
Not necessarily. Well, it depends. Well, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, if they're calling balls in the middle of the court out, well, then yeah, it's just a matter of time till they win. But I think your average cheater is probably not going to call balls out that are 2 feet inside the line. And so I think you still have some recourse in terms of how well you play or how well you compete. Granted, it's pretty difficult at that point where when you have in the back of your head that you're being cheated.
Yeah, that's the biggest mind game anybody can play is when you know you've just been cheated, because then every time you're getting ready to hit, you're worrying about hitting nowhere near the line because you're scared that they're going to call it out. I mean, you have to have some sort of recourse, and if you can think of any other way, everybody, but it's really hard to deal, and I've lost a bunch of matches because I didn't deal with it, and it just sat in the back of my mind, and it,
right.
Even if the person's worse than you, and you're winning when it happens, and you're still winning after it happens, they've just planted a big old seed that's just burning you, and I don't think that I've ever seen you cheat, Ian, but I've seen people blatantly cheat you, and I've seen you lose plenty of matches because of it.
Listen, I can remember more than once really losing my head due to people cheating against me. And so, yeah, there's no doubt about that. I definitely Can't deny that. It does suck. It's terrible. And I actually agree with your statement a second ago that it probably is just about the worst thing that could possibly happen during a competitive match. That being said, and Jason and I did not discuss this beforehand, by the way. That being said, I don't think I could possibly in good conscience condone in an instructional setting for students to cheat. And so I can't possibly say that that's a good solution to this problem. There might not be a good solution if there's not a line judge readily available. I don't know. It's tough, man. But I'm going to go ahead and say for the record that it's not okay to cheat, in my opinion. And I'm not condemning.
I've done it once in my life.
Yeah.
And it was a great move then, and I don't regret it whatsoever. It's not something that you just go, oh, I think this guy's cheating. Now I'm going to start cheating.
Right.
No, you know, the guy who I did that on had hooked me about 9 times very clearly. You know, and there's ways you can tell if people are just missing calls or if they're blatantly cheating, and he was just blatantly cheating. So my options were, and I was quite a bit better than him, but if somebody's going to cheat that much, it's 3-2 in the first set, he's cheated 9 times, I'm going to lose eventually.
Sure.
So something's got to happen, and what happened was I cheated quite blatantly, like right in the middle of the service line. He went and got a judge. Bam. We're both on an even mental state, and I ended up winning like the next 9, well, I won 9 out of the next 11 games. So,
and it's,
you know, it sucks to do that, and it took a lot for me to do that because I don't want to be a cheater. But, you know, and yeah, I could have gone and got the line judge myself, but again, that's really tough for most people to do.
And by the way, listeners, the ball that Jason called out in the middle of the service line was not a serve.
No, it was in by at least 3 yards on all lines. There was no question. And he had just hooked me by about a foot on a serve that I had. So it was quite evident what was going on there.
I remember that call.
That was no overt game.
I saw that call occur, and yeah, that was it was shocking to the people on the sideline, much less him.
But back to the topic, for people who are playing and maybe you're playing not even a league match, just a competitive match somewhere where there are not line judges like most leagues aren't, that's a really difficult situation. I guess the best advice I can give you would be to try and have your stable routine down. Try to ignore the call and just get back into a rhythm and routine that works and pretend it didn't happen. But quite honestly, that's almost impossible to do.
It is tough. And I think it's worth mentioning, Jay, and we're going to kind of wrap things up with this, that, excuse me, that's a great deal of our listeners, a lot of their matches are being played in a semi-social type setting. Yeah, it might be kind of a club team match or, a club tournament, that sort of thing, or maybe a public court type, a park facility tournament, that sort of thing. It's not necessarily USTA. And so I think the ground rules are probably a little different there. Because like you said, there are no line judges. And I think at that point, you kind of have to decide which is more important to you. Because as you stated earlier, Jay, winning is not even necessarily the most important thing for everybody listening. So you guys have to kind of judge for yourselves how far you want to take this. And again, I can never remember cheating somebody on purpose. I don't think I have. And I don't think I ever would. It's just something that I don't feel would be worth doing. And Jason, I don't say that to condemn you, by the way. And I know you know that. But
I sleep well.
Yeah, I know you do. but, you know, there's different levels of competition, and sometimes it calls for different measures, I guess is all I can say. And it's just kind of a crappy situation. Jason, anything else on that before we wrap up?
No, I mean, if there's a line judge available, I would go at it the way I mentioned earlier. Be nice about it. Say you're not seeing things well. That is your best option. Go to that. You don't want to get into some sort of fight over something. But, you know, if your livelihood and a whole lot of money's on the line, then maybe it's a little tougher to do.
I agree. And I don't think we have any of those people listening, so but keep that in mind, everybody. all right, well, go ahead, buddy.
Different situations, you know, it's all mental. Figure it out mentally what situation works best for you and go at it in a somewhat calm manner if you can.
Yeah. All right, well, Jason, thanks a lot for being with me to discuss these topics, and we've gone a whole bunch over time, but I think this is going to be really entertaining for people to listen to, and it's it's like we said early on, it's something we're all going to have to deal with at some point or another. If you play any form of competitive tennis, you're going to see one of these types of five players at some point or another. So it's probably good to think about beforehand, or maybe there's a certain type of player you've been struggling with, and hopefully some suggestion that Jason or I made is going to be helpful for you in the future. But Jay, thanks a lot for spending your time talking with myself, and hopefully our listeners enjoyed it. And I hope you'll be back on the show again soon.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, everybody.
All right, that brings this episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 75, to a close. Thank you very much for joining me today. I hope today's show was entertaining and also insightful. Hopefully you learned something about how to deal with distracting types of players, or players who can even, you know, try to beat you with poor sportsmanship. It's an important topic and something that, again, we're all going to have to deal with, so you might as well be prepared for it and know the best course of action to take. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. Remember that if you're interested in a West Coast clinic and maybe helping me find a facility and actually get everything set up, please send me an email if you're around the LA or San Francisco area. Again, my email address is ian@essentialtennis.com, and I'll give whoever is willing to help me out in that area a large discount off the price of that clinic that I do on the West Coast. Thanks very much for joining me today, everybody. Take care, and good luck with your tennis.